Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1342, we feature two stories by new Life Rattle writer Aubrey Kay on our final Mother's Day theme show this year. Aubrey Kay is a fifth-generation Toronto native, born in 1980. She moved 15 times, attended 9 schools, and traveled to 12 countries before settling down with her husband, who had only moved house once and made planting roots look very appealing. They now raise their 3-year-old son in the Bloor West Village area of Toronto, and Aubrey spends her days fielding questions beginning with, why? She tries to make her son eat anything other than cheese and kisses his cheeks mercilessly. Aubrey's career and hobbies are generally similar, organizing and labeling things. Aubrey Kay wrote and self-published her first book, How to Make Fire, at age 4. Sales were poor, she says, due to only 1 copy in circulation. Aubrey Kay writes with a precise, succinct style and a melodic rhythm that moves you forward effortlessly. With ample psychic space, she creates a wonderful groove for the reader to follow the flow of the narrative. But don't let the easy flow lull you. Aubrey doesn't spoon-feed us. Her writing is sharp, and you have to pay attention. Tonight's first story visits the theme of motherhood from 2 angles. First, it delivers a distinct character sketch of the narrator's own mother. And then it gives us our first glance of the narrator herself, early in the morning, still under the covers, with a bottle of her husband's sperm tucked against her body to keep it warm. And there we have it, all the necessary ingredients for parenthood. Let's listen now as Aubrey Kay reads her story, Astra, tonight on Life Rattle.
Astra by Aubrey Kay. She stands 5 foot nothing. Her frame is slight, boyish, and every feature is fine. Arms, fingers, chin, ankles. All but her eyes and teeth, oversized in a petite face, which give her the appearance of a Cupid doll. She had 4 cesareans for 4 babies and weighs 110 pounds. My earliest memories of my mother are of playing with her hands during church service. I would admire her nails, impeccably home manicured, and trace the skin graft scar running along the length of her left middle finger from when she fell through a glass door when she was little. They took skin from my bum. She says French women always have perfect nails and perfect eyebrows. Her ancestry is Irish, but French women are more perfect. From my mother, I inherit the ability to sense the percentage of cashmere or silk in a fabric by sight, touch to confirm, a debilitating attention to detail, and a love of Persian carpets. I think children are bigger now than they used to be because they put hormones in Coca-Cola. Now 61, she spends Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Academy of Realist Art in the Junction. Recently, she finished a painting that took a year to complete. She submitted 3 pieces to be juried for the open house gala, and all 3 won. When she paints, she uses 2 pairs of glasses, one on top of the other. Fernando says my paint is the good stuff. You can't get stuff like this anymore, even though it's from the 70s and the tubes are old. If it's good enough for Fernando, it's good enough for me. The front door squeaks open at 5:45 a.m. My husband, Andrew, and my mom whisper in the hall downstairs. "Hi, Mom, you're early." I made great time. There wasn't any traffic on the Gardner, you know, because it's so early. "Thanks again for coming." "Where's Aubrey?" "Upstairs, getting ready." I stretch my arms out from under the covers and expand my chest, holding my breath. The bedroom air is chilly compared to the warmth under the duvet, and I consider tucking my arms back in. Instead, I check the weather app on my phone. 5 degrees now, with an expected high of 13. I should layer. The Ziploc bag with the bottle of my husband's sperm is sandwiched between my breasts, close to my skin to keep it at body temperature. I tuck it under one arm, drape my legs over the side of the bed, and stand up. I dress deliberately and awkwardly so as not to drop the warm bottle. I overhear Andrew explain the meals laid out in the fridge, labeled with my post-it notes. "This is breakfast here, pretty easy, and milk. Lunch is here, with a fruit." "Any fruit?" "This one, here, she's labeled it." "Of course she has." "This is a plum, for lunch, to help him poop." "He's not pooping?" I skid along the hardwood floor and run down the stairs, grabbing a jacket. "Hi, Mummy." I hug her around the shoulders. "Thanks again." I raise my eyebrows at Andrew. "Ready?" "Yes," says Andrew. "Do you have it?" "Hugo's not pooping?" says Mom. "Yes, in my armpit. No, but he probably will today. He'll tell you. Just take him to the bathroom." Andrew and I scurry out the door and into our Volvo station wagon. The air is clear and smells of dead leaves. The streets on the way to Mississauga are ghostly. Many of the streetlights still glow against the gray dawn. Andrew's phone buzzes. He glances at the screen. "Oh, your mom just texted. She says..." "Oh, never mind." "Never mind what? What did she say?" "I think it was just for me to read. Here, though." He passes me the phone. "Just between me and you." Smiley face. "Morning. You know how much Aubrey enjoys you playing with her hair. I was thinking if any time during this ordeal you are able to, you could do that. I think it would calm her down, relax her, and comfort her. And perhaps consequently, you as well." Smiley face. "Just an idea." The stout Filipino nurse, Emerald, calls my name and I blink. Marilyn Dennis's chirpy voice continues on the wide plasma screen in the corner of the waiting room as I stand, collect my purse, my Tim Hortons tea, and tap Andrew on the leg. We follow behind Emerald, who leads us down a hall decorated with Ann Getty's photographs and newspaper clippings of Dr. Michael's successes in fertility, to a small clinic room. She instructs me, mostly with hand gestures, to strip from the waist down. Andrew sits on a teal upholstered chair and takes my boots from me as I remove them. The entire room, including the cabinets that house the medical supplies, is decorated in a muted 80s palette. Mauve walls, beige cupboards, flecked green countertop, teal chair. I hop up on the thin paper sheet covering the gray examination table. I stare up at the ceiling tiles, noting that one is stained. The long, fluorescent lights hum vaguely. I breathe in and out, and focus on a Folic Acid Association of Ontario poster advertising, "It's never too early." In and out, and Andrew plays with my hair.
That was Aubrey Kay reading her story, Astra. Our second story tonight is a bit of an anomaly for Life Rattle, and actually quite an uncommon approach to narrative writing in general. Aubrey has chosen to present her story using a second-person point of view, which works well, bringing an effortless intimacy to a very personal story addressed to her child on the day of his birth. Let's listen now as Aubrey Kay reads her story, Birth.
Birth, by Aubrey Kay. It is early on a Sunday morning. We drive down Roncesvalles Avenue in our Volvo station wagon, and I sit cupped in the passenger seat, reclined and knees raised, because you are so heavy. Your empty little car seat is strapped securely in the back seat because Papa read the manual 3 times. He records a video of me on his iPhone when we get stuck in neighborhood traffic on the way to St. Joe's Hospital by the lake. The day is overcast, but by the time you arrive, the sun will come out. It has been 258 days since we found out you were in me. We heard the news the day after Papa's birthday, and he thinks it's the best present he's ever had. We found out you were a boy the day before my birthday, and I think it's the best present I've ever had. We spent over 200 days talking about what to name you, because your papa and mama like to debate things. For 200 days, your name was Baby. Papa talked to you, and sang to you, and listened to you sloshing around in me. Sometimes you kicked him. Sometimes you hiccuped. Sometimes we pushed a bump where your foot was, and you pushed back. Every night, we said good night to each other and good night, Baby. In the video, I am tired and excited and nervous. My nerves drill into my chest, and you push in my womb, and I feel tickled inside. I feel I am bursting for you to come out. And I feel scared, because I never had a person come out of me before. In the video, Papa asks me what the date is, and I say the wrong one by accident. Such are my nerves. At the hospital, we wait. We wait, tied up to little machines that count your heartbeat and count my womb squeezes and count the time as it passes. We wait for people to read the machines. We wait for people to tell us what to do. We wait for people to bring me orange juice. I drink the orange juice to make you jump. My bulbous belly makes Papa laugh, and he takes more photos and videos than he ever has before. I look out the window to the light gray sky and the dark gray lake the lake by the city I returned to after traveling around the world, one country at a time, like playing hopscotch, before taking a long Pacific flight home and seeing your papa at someone's wedding, where he looked so handsome, and I had never noticed just how handsome he was, and we danced badly and laughed all evening, and decided we both like to be more than just friends. While I wait in the hospital, I nod off and dream of the sky and of flying, and the beeping of the machines keeps time with your heart and mine. The doctor who greets us that morning says he is just beginning his shift. He tells us, "We are going to have a baby today." Today, on this overcast, almost sunny, November day by the lake. Papa remembers some of the next bit better than I do. After the doctor tells me, your heartbeats are slow. They slow down, 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 and then come back to normal every time my womb squeezes you. I don't think you mind, but the doctor does, and Papa and I do. A team comes in to give me paperwork to sign so that they can bring you out of me in the way that will help you the best. I sign, and we take a trip down the hall in our bed on wheels. Papa must wait behind a cruel yellow line on the floor in the hall until we are ready for him to catch up. I hate that yellow line, and he hates it, and it makes me feel like I am all alone because I love Papa so very much. But you are with me, I remember now, and we are helping each other. I carry your heaviness, and you keep your little heart beating so that we can wait for Papa together, so we can celebrate your birthday together. The doctor and his team make me numb from the waist down, and I don't like that either, because I can't feel you anymore. But you can still feel me. Papa joins us in the room and holds my hand, strokes my hair, and kisses my forehead because I have a special air mask on my mouth. Then, like a ziplock, my womb, your little room, opens and you see light, so much light, and you hear sound, and you feel cold, and you cry because you can. And Papa and I cry because we have never loved anyone so much. The doctor and his team make sure your numbers are written down, how heavy you are and how long you are. You still cry, and I like to think it's because you feel far away from me instead of inside me, because that's why I'm crying too. The first thing you hear me say with your ears outside my womb is, "I love him. I want him. I love him. I want him." You hear your papa thanking everyone in the whole room twice. Our kind midwife wraps you in a blanket with a blue stripe on it and thinks it would be a good idea for you to see your mama. You smell your mama, and I smell your sweet, warm, wet head, and you poke me in the eye with your finger, and I laugh, and you stop crying. My two favorite smells are Papa's cheek and your sweet, warm, wet head on your birthday. Papa takes off his hospital gown, and the first feeling you have outside my womb is Papa's dark, curly chest. Papa stays with you while you roll down the hall in your little bed on wheels. You hold Papa's finger tight with your strong fist because he is your papa. Your bed travels past a waiting room filled with your family and they shout and cheer for you because it is your birthday. Nonna and Nonno, and Granddad and Grandma, and your aunts and uncles. And Papa stays with you because you are his Hugo. Papa sees that the window is propped open in the room they take you to. He can smell the lake and feel the wind because it is such a beautiful November day. When I see you again, our midwife says you may be hungry because birthdays can make you hungry. She unwraps my chest and unwraps you from your blanket and holds you while you find some food for me. You know exactly what to do because you're so smart. How do you know? Did you practice in my womb? You are a light, small, warm bird. Your head is covered with tiny, dark curls, like Papa's. Your nose is very Irish, and you open and close your fingers on my chest, like your hand is gulping at the same time as your mouth. The food makes you happy, and makes me even happier, because you are with me again, and Papa is with me again, and it is your birthday, and the sun has come out.
That was Aubrey Kay reading her story, Birth. And I cannot think of a finer story to wrap up the Mother's Day series of programs featured over the past month. This concludes Life Rattle number 1342. My name is Lori Callis. I had the pleasure of recording Aubrey reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in to our next show for a Life Rattle Classic program hosted by Virginia Ashbury.